Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Philbrook Museum of Art received a major gift of American Indian art last year in 2014 with over 400 pieces of art from southwestern Hopi culture in the Hyatt Collection. This collection consists mainly of what we call kachinas, or katsinas as the Hopis call them, along with basketry and pottery. The first exhibit of objects from that collection is now on display at Philbrook downtown. The Art of Ceremony, Hopi Katsinam, is on display during normal museum hours through September 6th. The katsinas are contemporary pieces depicting the various spirit deities that are a part of Hopi culture. Some are traditionally rendered, others are more artistically rendered, but all were carved for the art market rather than ceremonial use. My guest today is Philbrook's curator of Native American and non-Western art, Christina Burke. She's a cultural anthropologist who has curated a number of exhibits from Philbrook's extensive Native American art collections, and has contributed as well curatorially and through scholarship to a number of traveling exhibitions from institutions around the country. She's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Christina Burke, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This exhibit that's going on at Philbrook downtown is the first from a recent gift to the museum from the Hyatt Collection of Hopi Art. How did this collection come about, and how did it come to the museum?
Well, it's interesting. It actually came out of the blue, to tell you the truth. It was about 2 years ago when I received a phone call, one of many calls that I receive, from a collector who asked if the museum might be interested in his collection. And we had not met before, and in fact, I wasn't familiar with his name. So we chatted for a bit, and I wanted to know, well, first of all, what's in the collection? And second of all, was he looking for the museum to purchase it, or was he going to donate it? And then the thought was, well, how does this fit into Philbrook's existing collection of Native art? And actually, it's a wonderful fit because Philbrook, up until recently, did not have a large collection of katsinas or carved wooden figures from the Pueblo people.
Mm-hmm. And now this is Hopi art. Now, there's certainly a lot of pottery from that part of the world, but is there something about the particular culture that was lacking in the Philbrook collection as far as Hopi art?
In terms of this particular art form, yes. Mm-hmm. Philbrook has, as you mentioned, pottery. We've got a lot of baskets. Hopi pottery and baskets as well, but we've never really collected this particular art form, these carved wooden figures that the Hopi and other Pueblo people create, which are called katsinas. And they represent these spirit beings that are part of traditional Pueblo belief.
Non-indigenous people would know it as kachina, but it's katsina, correct?
Yes. There is no CH sound in the Hopi language.
Okay.
And so I'm trying to be respectful and accurate as possible. And this particular collection is almost exclusively from Hopi Pueblo in northern Arizona. So if that's how the Hopi say it, then that's how we're going to say it.
Right, right. So these little carved figures, they're sort of spirit beings. And how are they used within Hopi culture? Are they maybe a graven image of some sort, or what exactly? How do they use these actual carved figures?
Well, these spirit beings are believed to control just about every part of our lives, whether it's the weather and rain coming down to water the crops.
There's one figure that's a germination katsina.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
and
it's
success
make sure of the crops.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. There's a snow maiden katsina. So weather forces, animal forces, all kinds of forces of the universe that affect human beings. And there are literally hundreds of different katsinas, these spirit beings, in Pueblo tradition. The belief is that the spirit beings themselves actually live in the mountains, in the San Francisco Peaks, near the Hopi Reservation in northern Arizona. But for part of the year, beginning in December, those spirit beings come down from their home in the mountains and live among Hopi people in the Pueblo. And then in July, they return to the mountains.
And in the image, being in the home or in the Pueblo will suggest that spirit come be a part of their community?
Yes, and bring blessings and reinforce proper behavior among Hopi people. So even when the katsinas leave to go back to their home, they have gifted these carved wooden figures to children and young women in the community to remind them of who they are and what their powers are and what is proper behavior to keep harmony in the community and balance in the world as a whole.
Now, a lot of times when you see a tradition like this, as the modern contemporary world intervenes, a lot of times these crafts are somewhat lost. It seems like this is a very, very popular pastime among artists to create these catsinas, even to this day.
It is. I think since the early 1900s, I would say, there's been a growing market for these carved figures. And early on, collectors, whether they were individual collectors or museum curators, were interested in objects that had been used in ceremony and really were a part of the community itself. But all of these figures are contemporary. And by that, I mean they've been made recently within the last 20, 25 years or so. But also they were made specifically for the market to be sold to non-Hopis. So they really are an art form. They're not used in ceremony.
All right. So none of the things in the show are used at home or in ceremony.
That's correct. This entire collection, actually, again, they're artworks. They're not ceremonial objects.
Some of them look somewhat like they could be their pattern off ones that might be used in ceremony. And then others in this collection are obviously very much artworks. And one that comes to mind is the work of Wilmer Kay.
Yes.
He has a number of works in this exhibit. These are really tremendously beautiful sculptures. I would call them, in some cases, very much sculpture.
They are sculptures. And Wilmer, very talented artist and actually comes from a family of artists. His sister, Verma Nkwatuwa, is a well-known and exceptional jeweler. And her uncle, Charles Lolema, was also an exceptional jeweler. And Philbrook has an incredible collection of his jewelry in the Adkins collection. I think it's his grandmother then, was a weaver, a basket weaver. And in fact, we have one of her baskets in our collection at Philbrook as well.
Let's talk about a couple of the works that are, one that really struck my eye was this work by Wilmer Kay. It's called The Long Hair Katsina. And if you can imagine, it's a figure, but it's a very contemporary looking figure. And off the back is this long flowing black hair that's blowing in the wind with these eagle feathers that adorn it down the course of the black hair. It's really quite a striking sculpture.
It is. And if you notice at the base of that sculpture, there are all these miniature long hair katsinas as well, lining sort of the body alongside the main figure.
Mm-hmm. And is this just a contemporary art piece for the most part?
It is. And actually, it was entered into a juried competition at the Heard Museum in Phoenix several years ago and won an award there. And actually, as part of the donation of this collection, in addition to the artworks, there's this wonderful documentation, including the ribbon that it won at the Heard Museum.
Now, another piece by Wilmer Kay is utterly different. It's actually a flat katsina. And it's two-dimensional. Now, that also has a sort of historical background within the history of how the tribe uses katsinas.
Yes, those flat dolls are sort of the first gifts given to young girls in the Hopi community to teach them about the katsinas and this very complex and rich religious tradition. And so the flat dolls are sort of the first thing that you would give a young child, and as they get older, they get more and more complex and intricately carved figures.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this strictly a gift for women and young girls?
It is. And this is part of the Hopi tradition that only men are initiated into these katsina societies. And only men initiated into that particular society are privy to the teachings and a true understanding of that particular katsina. And as I said, there are hundreds of them in this religious belief. And I can't talk too much about it because I'm not Hopi and I'm not a man and I haven't been initiated in any of these ceremonies. So a lot of the details are just beyond our knowledge, but we can still appreciate the artistic achievement of these wonderful carvings that represent the tradition.
Now, this is the other thing, is when you see some of these katsinas, you say, is this really a wood carving? Because it looks like it's adorned with all sorts of different materials. Is that the case for some of these?
It is. And this first show, as you've mentioned, is really diverse in terms of carving styles, even of individual artists, from the relatively simple to the incredibly complex. And as I mentioned before, the market for katsinas as an art form has really grown throughout the 20th and into the 21st century. So there are juried competitions all over the Southwest for these pieces. And I think the artists themselves really take this as a challenge to carve as intricately as possible, but also to use paint and pigment and other materials, felt, yarn, feathers, etc., to adorn these pieces and make them sculpture.
Yeah. Some are incredibly small, too. I mean, we're talking maybe an inch or two tall.
And that's another kind of skill, I think, and something I wanted to highlight in this very diverse show. So there's one carver in particular, Stuart Dukapu, who is exceptional at carving these miniatures. And there's actually five pieces by him in the exhibition.
Yeah, and you almost need a magnifying glass to see the detail, because they look like they're pretty tremendously detailed for being an inch or two high.
And maybe we should have some magnifying glasses in the exhibition. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. What you also see as you see some of these katsinas is a variety of katsinas based on various animals. One in particular that shows up time and time again is the owl. What is there a significance to the owl in Hopi culture?
I'm sure there is. I'm not really well versed on that. But one of the things I think is significant is that there are specific kinds of owls. So there's a screech owl, for instance, mm-hmm. and a great horned owl. And actually, I put the owl katsinas together in one case so that you could see those differences of each one, each species, and each carver's interpretation of it.
And really, the purpose of this exhibit is just show off the beauty of these actual carved sculptures.
Absolutely. The beauty, the artistry, and really the diversity, different carving styles, and to introduce the audience here in Tulsa to this exceptional art form, but also, again, to be an introduction to the complexity of Hopi religious tradition as well.
Now, there were some katsiam which were a little bit different than I would ever expect. One was by Bryson Aniquitiwa. It's called a Katsina Chief's Lieutenant. And it's this really almost long, sinewy form that looks utterly different than every other katsima in the collection that's on display. And it's something completely different. What can you tell us about that one?
And one of the things that Bryson and some of the other carvers are known for is using the natural form and shape of the cottonwood branch or root itself. And so in that particular piece, Bryson didn't force a shape onto it, but rather use the existing shape of that piece of cottonwood to form the body of that particular katsina.
Now, what are some of the other highlights from the show from your perspective as you look through these katsima? And I guess you have, about 400 of them, and we have about 30 or 40 on display.
The collection itself is quite large, so this is the first of a series of three exhibitions that Philbrook will host. And one of the things that I included in this exhibition and that is in the collection as well are baskets as mm-hmm. well. So you see some of those, and that really fits hand in glove with Philbrook's incredible collection of Native American baskets. But that you see katsina imagery not just carved into wood, but also woven into baskets and sometimes painted on pottery as well. So these images are not just the wooden carvings, but are an intricate part of Hopi life throughout the year and in these different art forms. So I really wanted to connect this new gift to existing collections at Philbrook.
Mm. My guest today is Christina Burke, the curator of Native American and non-Western art at Philbrook Museum. Philbrook Downtown, this actually opened a month or two ago. We're just getting around to talking about it. It's called The Art of Ceremony, Hopi Katsinam, which will be on display through September 6th. And I assume you're going to follow this up periodically with more shows of Katsinam. And it sounds like your background is in Native art, but this particular part of Native art is sort of new to you, so I guess you're doing a crash course and learning more about this.
Yes, and this is the first of a series of three exhibitions, so I'll be doing more research, and we'll be bringing up more pieces from this collection to Philbrook over the next several years.
Now, there were a couple pieces. I was thinking of the long-haired katsinam. This would fit in perfectly with the show that's upstairs, Identity and Inspiration, because it follows that theme of, here's a traditional material, but I'm making it utterly creative into an art piece as opposed to something more resembling a ceremonial piece, whether it was a ceremonial piece or created for the market in the first place.
I think that's true. And this collection in particular focuses on Hopi carvings. Other Pueblo people also have this very complex religious belief and do their own carvings. But Mr. Hyatt's collection is almost exclusively from the Hopi of northern Arizona, and he collects from the artists themselves. So many of them have become good friends of his over the past 20 or 30 years. So these are primarily living artists and people with whom he has a close personal relationship. So we're hoping to bring some of the carvers to Tulsa so that they can tell us about this unique art form and some of the religious tradition out of which it comes.
Mm-hmm. Now, a couple of other artists that really struck my eye was Vaughn Fred. He has a piece called Black Ogre. And that ogre, there's also a series of ogres.
There are a series of ogres. And again, as with the owls, I put the ogres together to highlight some of the diversity. It's not just one kind of ogre, but many kinds of ogres. And I believe their function is to encourage proper behavior of Hopi people.
And it's the boogeyman.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, parents tell their kids, now, if you don't behave, you know, one of those ogres might sweep you up and carry you away.
Another one that really caught my eye was by Cecil Kalnip-Tiwa, and it's a piece called Blue Whipper. What is the significance of this particular one?
Well, the whippers, like ogres, are to reinforce proper behavior. And so if someone, a child or an adult, is misbehaving at a ceremony or has been misbehaving in the community prior to a ceremony or a katsina dance taking place, those whippers might take them out in public and whip them in front of witnesses. And that's, again, to reinforce you've not been behaving properly, you know. Mm. And remind them.
And that particular katsina is really interesting because it does use a variety of materials, it looks like, beyond the carved materials.
Yes, and this represents the katsinas themselves when they come into the Hopi community between December and July to perform these seasonal dances. And they'll have all kinds of paraphernalia, including feathers on their outfits, whips, as you say. And so these carvings represent those, and they're really mixed media sculpture, I'd say.
Mm. My guest today is Christina Burke, a curator of Native American and non-Western art. The Art of Ceremony is on display through September 6th at Philbrook downtown. This is the first exhibit drawn from the new Hyatt Collection of Hopi Art. About 440 items, something around there?
Something like that.
And most of them are katsina, correct?
That's correct.
And then, but there are also some basketry. Is there pottery in the collection? Or?
There's a couple of pieces of pottery as well, and some paintings, mm-hmm. And rattles also.
Uh-huh. And rattles used, again, as a ceremonial object or for the market?
These particular ones were made for the market, but they represent ones that would be used in ceremony.
Mm-hmm. Now, also at Philbrook downtown is the last 6 weeks to see one of the inaugural exhibitions of the Philbrook downtown, and that is also something you curated. I mentioned it earlier, Identity and Inspiration. It'll be the last 6 weeks for that. For people who haven't seen that, they obviously should take a look at it because it really showcases some of the highlights of the contemporary Native American collection from Philbrook.
Well, and what I did with that exhibition is to highlight the diversity of our collections. We've got some wonderful historical pieces from the 19th century and early 20th century, as well as contemporary work, but rather put it into a chronology from the oldest thing to the newest thing. I chose a thematic approach and this theme of identity and inspiration and what's motivating the artist in their creative process, whether they're preserving tribal traditions, adapting to new materials and new markets, innovating new forms, or integrating non-traditional styles and even social commentary.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of them are commenting on social situations too.
And even on the Indian art market, actually.
Yeah. Will you follow that up with a new exhibit on that upper floor, or will that go to some other use?
Well, it's a long-range installation, and I'm planning to change out some of the works on paper and some of the baskets, mm-hmm. But the basic installation and those themes will remain the same for a while. Mm. But we're coming up on the 2-year anniversary of Philbrook Downtown this summer in June, and we've already changed out a few things upstairs, and it's time to change out a few more.
In fact, when I was up there, I noticed a new piece that's at the entrance to that gallery, and it's by Jeffrey Gibson, which was a new acquisition this past year, Eternal Return.
That is an interesting piece.
Because it almost has relationships to the Katsinum downstairs, even though it's different cultures, it's a sculptural figure.
It is. It's a large-scale sculptural figure. And actually, we did acquire it last year, and originally it was installed on the lower level in our modern contemporary gallery. And that gallery was recently reinstalled by our director, Rand Suffolk. So if you haven't been there, I encourage you to come down and see what's new at Philbrook Downtown. But with that reinstallation on the main level, we moved Eternal Return upstairs. And it does have a nice relationship, I think, to both the Katsina exhibition as well as our modern contemporary, because that piece is very contemporary.
And it uses materials that you'll often see in fancy dancing costumes, right? The little metal ringlets that sort of make noise as they're dancing.
The jingles or tinklers.
Yeah, jingles.
And in fact, there are jingle dress dances in contemporary powwows. Yes, and Jeffrey Gibson, who's Mississippi Choctaw, has incorporated three different colors of those jingles or tinklers on this figure, as well as beads and yarn and leather. And it's really an exceptional sculptural piece in oversized form.
Yeah, and you mentioned the downstairs exhibit. I should mention that because if people haven't been down to Philbrook downtown in a couple of months, there's an amazing collection of private collectors here in Tulsa, de Kooning, Joan Mitchell. I think there's a Rothko.
Mark Rothko, yes.
There's a Mark Rothko. There's Adolf Gottlieb. There's
Hans Hoffman,
and a Richter, and a Clifford Still, which I think. Probably we've never had a Clifford Still in Tulsa before, but it's on display right now in the downstairs portion of Philbrook downtown.
That's right. So if you haven't been in a while, please come in and check it out.
All right. Well, Christina Burke, we appreciate your time. The Art of Ceremony will be on display through September 6th at Philbrook downtown. You can learn more at philbrook.org. Christina, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Christina Burke is Philbrook's curator of Native American and non-Western art, and the curator of The Art of Ceremony, Hopi Katsinam, which is on display at Philbrook downtown through September 6th. For more information about that exhibit, as well as the other exhibits at Philbrook downtown, visit philbrook.org. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Barry Friedman.
It wasn't about politics this time, but faith. I'll explain with first two stories. What seemed like a million years ago, I heard Jim Baker on TV. Yes, that Jim Baker preaching on shame. A Baptist pastor he knew had humiliated a young girl for dancing in front of a congregation, had her in tears. If that's Christ, screamed Baker from his pulpit, I don't want him. Second story. In a homily at St. Patrick's, Cardinal John O'Connor said, I categorically denounce the hypothesis that to kill an abortionist is justifiable in order to save babies. I have consistently denounced violence against persons based on their sexual orientation. And later, he told the New York City newspaper, let me make this clear. If anyone feels the need to kill an abortion doctor, if anyone thinks that is the answer, come kill me first. If that's Christ. Why bring this up? Because as much as anything, what happened in Indiana last month, what is still happening there and in other states, including Oklahoma, is a battle about who gets to control the parameters, language, and meme of Christianity in America. Remember that pizza place at the center of the controversy? It was the owner's contention that their faith directed allowed them to refuse service to gays and lesbians. If a gay couple came in and wanted us to provide pizzas for their wedding, said the owner, Crystal O'Connor of Memories Pizza, we would have to say no. We are a Christian establishment. I choose to be heterosexual. Why should I be beat over the head to go along with something they choose? So where do you start with this? Let Elizabeth Loring of the Ripple Effect, a choir group dedicated to the unification of community, including the LGBT community, pick up the story. Everyone had the same thought at first, she said, that the O'Connors were cartoon characters. But then a funny thing happened. Ripple Effect and its members went to Memory's Pizza to support the O'Connors, to sing to them. Why? Because the O'Connors face vitriol and anger and threats, and here's the money shot. It's what, Elizabeth concluded, Jesus would have done. When the group got there, they sang, and a trucker yelled, God bless America, as if the group wasn't. A retired man told them to get a job. Now, the O'Connors weren't there. The place had closed. Still, the group delivered its message of love, of faith, of its Christianity. But if no good deed goes unpunished, no bad one goes unrewarded. Memory's Pizza received almost $1 million in contributions from Christians. Ripple Effect received messages like this from Christians. On Facebook, the notes read, I'm getting gay fatigue to go along with my race fatigue. Every one of these gay Christian choir members are liars. The place is shut down because of death threats from gay Nazis. How about these idiots go sing to them? If this is Christ. Garrett Epps, a professor of law at the University of Baltimore, warns about oversimplifying any of this. Listen, for heaven's sake, he says, let's not fall for the hokum that Christians are homophobes or that Christians support discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. Please don't fall into that trap, because you must know, if you think it through, how many Christians have taken risks and pushed their denominations in the name of equality. The claim that immunity from civil rights laws is Christian is a trap, because the corollary is that favoring legal equality is anti-Christian. Don't fall into the trap. But as Butch Cassidy says, it's the fall that'll kill you. Marvin Lavener, senior pastor at Tulsa's All Souls Unitarian Church, fights the same battle. Who gets to define Christianity, he asked. That's been a question for 2,000 years. If someone were to say Christians or Christianity rejects LGBT people or lifestyles, they would have to explain why evangelical Lutherans, Episcopalians, Congregationalists, Presbyterians, and a number of other small Christian denominations accept them, accept marriage equality. We all have blind spots, says Elizabeth Loring. But once we recognize this and admit to it, it's a lot easier to have compassion for someone with whom you disagree, even someone you think could do you harm. In Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and he sends rains on the righteous and on the unrighteous. Memory's Pizza has reopened, and the O'Connors say they will remodel with money and give the rest to charity. Ripple Effect is still singing. There's a story. A grandfather and grandson are walking on a beach. They see that a huge multitude of starfish are beached and dying. The boy starts throwing them back into the water one by one. The grandfather watches and then finally says gently, You know, you can't save them. There are too many. You can't throw enough back to make any difference. And the boy continues to throw, saying, But Grandpa, it makes a difference to this one, and this one, and this one.
Barry Freeman is a columnist for the Tulsa Voice, a freelance writer and stand-up comic, and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.